Welcome to episode 62 of the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm Beth Below. Since 2010, the Introvert Entrepreneur has been providing information and inspiration to introverts who want to amplify their strengths, as well as for extroverts who want to understand why introverts are so doggone quiet. I'm a professional coach, author, and speaker based in the Pacific Northwest and serving introverts worldwide. One of the very first articles I came across when I officially began gathering resources for my business was Jonathan Rauch's Caring for Your Introvert. Published in 2003 in The Atlantic, the article really hit home in its directness about what it means to be an introvert. I also really appreciated that Jonathan used humor and an ever so slightly snarky edge to get his message across. It was refreshing and intelligent, and it spurred such a big response that follow-up articles were written over the years. It's really a pleasure to welcome Jonathan to this edition of the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast, where we catch up on what's happened since that article ran in 2003. Jonathan is a contributing editor to The Atlantic and National Journal and is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Jonathan is the author of several books and many articles on public policy, culture, and economics. He was winner of the 2005 National Magazine Award for Columns and Commentary and the 2010 National Headliner Award for Magazine Columns. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome to the podcast. I'm so glad you're here today.
Hi, Beth. I'm very happy to be with you.
Well, what is making you smile today?
I just finished my taxes, my first year of married tax filing with my husband, Michael. This is a joyful day if you're gay in America when you can do your taxes as a married couple.
Absolutely. That makes me smile too. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's an amazing feeling.
I can't even imagine. So I'm so happy for you and everyone who gets to do that. I want to focus in our conversation on an article that you wrote back in 2003 for The Atlantic. And from what I understand, what I've read, it's one of the most popular articles that's ever at least been posted on their website, you know, getting the most traffic and shares. It's kind of reached rock star status. And in that article you wrote, "We can only dream that someday, when our condition, being introverts, is more widely understood, when perhaps an introvert's rights movement has blossomed and borne fruit, it will not be impolite to say, 'I'm an introvert. You are a wonderful person, and I like you. Now please shush.'" It feels like we are well on our way, like we've almost made to that point. What do you think? How do you think the movement is progressing? And where do you see that there's still work to be done?
You know, Beth, I kind of just wrote this article out of the blue because I was getting so exasperated. And it was just for fun, and it was going to be a column. And then The Atlantic said, well, no, let's make it a little longer and drop it in the back. So I had no idea what I was in for when I wrote that article. And now it's going on my tombstone as easily my greatest hit ever. I am not really sure that there's a movement. I get lots of emails from people who even today discover that article and say things like, wow, I just realized I'm an introvert and all these years I didn't know that and I felt terrible in school. I've had people say, even on occasion, that my article prevented them from even killing themselves in one case, so that's extreme. I've had a lot of people say, I give it to my husband or my wife or my boyfriend because, you know, they don't get it. So from where I sit, there's just still a whole lot of people out there struggling with this kind of sense of isolation of what's wrong with me. I don't see what looks like a real sort of groundswell in the popular culture. What I do see, which is really nice, is a lot of regular people understand what an introvert now is. I mean, they kind of understand it enough so that they have a dim idea what you might be talking about. So that is a start. You see it as a movement?
I've seen it as something of a movement. I've seen much more conversation. I've noticed that when I first started my business and talking about introverts, I did a Google alert to see where was the word introvert showing up in the media. And it used to be around crime. You know,
I love it.
It would be, you know, the suspected gunman, you know,
right, the loner,
the neighbors would say, yeah, he was really quiet, he kept to himself, I think he was an introvert. And everyone, you know, from the neighbors to the media reporters themselves would become sort of armchair psychologists and diagnosing this introversion on this person, whether or not, it was accurate. And so the majority of these Google alerts that would come across my account would be related to some sort of activity like that. And what I've noticed over the past few years is that has been transforming into more positive things, like introverts can be strong leaders, introverts can be great public speakers, how to manage an introvert, how to network as an introvert. So it seems like...
The creativity of introverts.
Exactly. So it seems like it has evolved a little bit in that direction.
Yeah, I think you put it beautifully. I don't think it's a movement yet. Maybe it never will be. Maybe it doesn't even need to be. But it definitely is a conversation. And that is new and different and important. And people are starting to pay attention now to the upside of being an introvert. You know, creativity, for example. And Susan Cain has brought some much-needed attention to those aspects. So, yeah, we have finally started the conversation. And that is such an important first step.
Yeah. I like to see it as a liberation. It's, you know, we're being liberated from the old stories, the old definitions that used to define us, and really starting to claim it for what it is.
Well, the first step, as we know from the gay rights struggle, which is what I came up in, is liberation of yourself from these stereotypes. Because, you know, when you're a minority and you're stereotyped, you believe these things about yourself. Oh, you know, I don't socialize much. You know, I must be gloomy. I must be depressed. Or, you know, I can't advance in my office if I don't do it their way. So I think we're still in that first step to some extent of understanding who we are and our own strength. And that, you know, damn it, there's nothing wrong with us. The next step would be getting out into the world more and sort of, you know, demanding some accommodations, demanding that the world meet us halfway, which until now in America, it has not.
Right. That's interesting because you did a follow-up interview with Sage Stossel, and there were a lot of points that you brought up in this interview that proved to be prescient. And one that jumped out at me was this notion of a geek economy. And I read that and I think also of that liberation, acceptance, and celebration and accommodation for a different perspective. And what I've noticed is that now geeks are kind of cool. It's, you know, whether the kind of geeky guy that says, can you hear me now, on the telephone commercials, or the popularity of the Big Bang Theory, or even since 2003, something that's really taken off is social media, which is, you know, as far as I can tell, built on the backs of all of those tech geeks, many of whom are introverts. What do you think about, you know, do you think we have kind of moved into this geek economy? And what do you think about this idea that being an introvert or being a geek is kind of cool now?
Well, geeks are rich, and rich is always cool. But I don't really think there's anything more to it than that. A lot of geeks are extroverts. A lot of introverts are not geeks. You know, I don't love this stereotype of, well, if you're introverted, you must be geeky. You know, you must be socially awkward. You must have your shirt tails out at work, you know. So I think it kind of misses the point to some extent. In all of these minority rights, liberation, consciousness-raising movement, you know, the first step is embracing the stereotype. But then the second step is moving beyond the stereotype. And to some extent saying, oh, geeks are cool. We must be geeks because we're introverts. And a lot of geeks are introverts. Well, it's kind of embracing the stereotype, but it's in fact not a true stereotype. Most of the introverts I know are just perfectly regular, competent people. They're not geeks. Mm-hmm. They're just introverts. And part of what we need the world to understand is that being an introvert is not strange.
Absolutely. I'm glad you put it that way. And you're absolutely right that the collapsing geek and introvert is akin to collapsing shy and introvert, which was one of the points.
Yeah, or gay and effeminate,
exactly.
You know, or whatever.
Exactly. And so it's really important to be able to distinguish those things. I think the geek angle has sometimes come in because it also means in some ways like misunderstood or on the fringe. And I think some introverts have identified that way a little bit because that's the way other people have labeled them, even if that's not true for them.
Yeah, and it is healthy to see an appreciation for a kind of creativity that is not relentlessly team-based and relentlessly outer-directed. And whether you're an introvert or just a creative person, you know, it's nice to see some recognition that that's where a lot of the economic engine is these days.
Absolutely. When I'm reading your pieces, what jumps out at me is you have a very wonderful sense of humor. I found myself laughing.
I do. I have a great sense of humor. Not enough people realize that.
It was very clever, very humorous.
I'm very serious. I'm very serious about my sense of humor.
Absolutely. That's the only way to be.
My jokes are all part of an industrial process I have. I developed them in years of trial and error in my basement lab.
So it's very contrived.
Absolutely. None of it's real.
Premeditated. Well, a lot of comedians are introverts. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Many actors, performers are introverts. Mm-hmm. That's where they're getting their energy.
Exactly.
If you're performing every day in life, it's easier for you to get up on stage and perform. It's just another one of your performances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you mentioned that it's the introvert is playing a role of the... I can't remember exactly how you put it in one of the articles.
That is, in fact, how I put it, yeah.
Okay, there you go.
But
all
humor
right,
is, you know, humor is key. And part of what I mean, I didn't set out to start something with that article, but I knew I wanted it to be funny. And I knew I wanted it to tweak extroverts and just have a little bit of fun at their expense, tease them a little bit. And again, another important first step when you're kind of part of a group or a minority or an image that has not been fully understood or accepted by society is to show that you can laugh at yourself and that you can laugh at others and you can have a little bit of fun with these stereotypes. And that works amazingly well.
Mm-hmm. It's like embracing all of those different parts of yourself, including the shadow side, you know, the little darker parts or the parts that other people have made fun of. It's much more empowering to take that on yourself and say, okay, I'm going to laugh, like you said, laugh at myself.
Yes. And also, don't forget, laugh at extroverts.
Absolutely, because they've laughed at us.
Yeah, and because, you know, for all their reputation of being easygoing and genial, extroverts, you know, they take their extroversion really seriously, you know, because if you don't do it their way, you're unfriendly, you know, or you're morose, or you're snobbish or arrogant. So, you know, I think they need to be taken down a peg or two.
It's about time.
About time, yeah. I got... That was a reaction I got a lot, you know, to this article. It's about time.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I think it must have been building up for a while.
Yeah, like a pressure cooker, you know. You mention, you know, along those lines of, you know, people in your life. Your partner, Michael, is an extrovert.
Husband, please.
Your husband. Oh, I'm
just,
so sorry.
We just paid our joint federal married taxes.
I stand corrected.
If we're going to have to file as married jointly, you better start calling us married.
Absolutely. Your husband, Michael, thank you for calling me on that. You know, he's an extrovert, and I imagine you have lots of extroverts in your life. How have your relationships evolved since you wrote that article, since you, you know, put it out there and said it's about time that we, you know, talk back?
Well, of course, he forgave me. Some of the articles indirectly about him and people like him. But living with an extrovert for now 17-year relationship, actually going on 18 years, gives you some real insight into what extroverts are actually like, both the positive and the minus. It is, for me at least, being a true introvert, not an extreme introvert, but a definite introvert. It's a real source of kind of struggle and a real need for self-mastery every day to be patient with Michael's need for company and his desire to think aloud all the time, to verbalize his thought. And the sheer energy, I mean, he's kind of like got two switches on and off.
Mm-hmm.
And this puts a lot of strain on my personality, just coping with this. I mean, it's like, you know, you have to deal with it. It's in the house. But it also turns out to be kind of a wonderful thing because it brings out parts of me that otherwise I wouldn't normally see. And we've learned so much about each other and how to meet each other halfway and what what's really important and what isn't. Like, what are the times she really needs me instead of like just needing stimulation? Mm-hmm. And what are the times when I really need some recharging time, and it's really, and I really need to do that for myself and override his needs. This is a lot of work, but it's really a journey. It just makes life very interesting. And it's not all that surprising that there's so many introvert extrovert couples. In some way we torment each other, but we also really do complement each other.
Yeah. Like you said, we draw out different aspects of ourselves. And I imagine just as he has probably inspired some extrovert energy in you, have you been able to inspire some introvert energy in him?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And he's, you know, he understands that, at least intellectually, the part of the world I'm from, my planet, a little better. I mean, it's really hard for extroverts to understand us because of the way they're wired. It's much easier for us to understand them because, you know, they're so obvious, frankly. But the way we are, you know, it's just not intuitively clear to an extrovert why someone would need to sit by themselves, why they would think that is fun and energizing. That just doesn't make sense. But what they can do is understand that there are people like that and even begin to value some of those habits. So yeah, it's much easier to be around another introvert, but it is much more challenging and in some ways more rewarding to be around an extrovert.
To close our conversation, I'm going to give you an opportunity to go to a place where there probably are no extroverts, and that's Introvert Island. And I ask all of my guests, if you were granted a 3-week vacation on Introvert Island, and you could only take 3 books with you, and this is the old-fashioned kind, no Kindles or iPads, what would you take with you and why?
Well, my picks are not super introverty or interesting. They're just my picks. So they kind of are. I guess one of my picks would be against the rule, and it's Star Trek seasons 1 and 2, but okay. One of them is the complete stories of Sherlock Holmes, the complete adventures. Mm-hmm. A favorite of mine since childhood. And of course, Holmes was one of the most famous introverts in history, a man who spent hours recharging with his violin, and something that, you know, Watson had a lot hard time understanding about him. Watson, of course, was an extrovert. So I didn't know it, but when I read Holmes as a kid and saw a lot of myself in Holmes, or what I wanted to be, you know, was actually an 11-year-old introvert looking for a role model. And anyway, Holmes is just great. Holmes is the original cool introvert.
Yeah.
And today he's cooler than ever. There's a wonderful book that I wouldn't be without by Donald Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E, called The Inland Sea. It was written in the 70s, and it's his solo travels through the Inland Sea of Japan. And it's the most marvelous travel book and memoir and contemplation of life. And it's beautiful and very moving. And it's also actually a good example of how rich an experience it is to travel and experience the world completely by yourself. Because he's surrounded by people all the time, but he is traveling alone. And that, as introverts know, is a very different experience. You just absorb so much of the world. Mm-hmm. It's a great, great book. And then the third would be Shakespeare's histories, because I've never read them. And I'm determined I must read them before I die. So that's they're going to the island with me.
Awesome. Thank you. My husband will be with you on the complete Sherlock Holmes, as well as the Star Trek. So if you wanted good company, he would
Star Trek, of course,
you.
Has one of the other great introverted characters in all of history, and that is Spock.
Spock, yes. I think, and are you speaking, so when you're talking about Star Trek, you're talking about the original, the first generation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Excuse me, there's only one Star Trek.
See, I kind of like Data, and he was the next generation.
Yeah, okay. I meant Star Trek.
Star Trek, the real Star Trek, right? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You set me straight. So, Jonathan, what if somebody wanted to read more of what you've written, learn more about you, and see what new projects
and
you have?
And buy my books?
And buy your books. Absolutely.
Did we mention buying my books?
Buying books, and we'll mention that a few times. What books can they buy?
I would love people to check me out, especially introverts, because caring for your introvert is only one of about 10,000 million things I've written over a long, varied, and I might even be tempted to say storied career as a writer. I have a website, which is jonathanrausch.com, and I post many of my articles there, as well as my books. And I think some of your audience will be interested in a short ebook I published a little while ago. It's a memoir of my first 25 years and of being deep in denial about being a gay kid and then a gay young adult, and how I brought my introvert mind to bear on all that and tried to solve that problem without admitting the truth. That's called Denial, My 25 Years Without a Soul. And you can buy it for only $2. So, wow. Well, less than a cup of coffee.
Absolutely.
So that's on my website, and so are bunches of articles and all kinds of things.
Excellent. And you mentioned there's another book that you had.
Yes, my best book ever was published 20 years ago. It's called Kindly Inquisitors, The New Attacks on Free Thought. It's about free thought and free speech and science and how societies make knowledge and why minorities actually benefit from societies that tolerate hate speech. And I would include introverts in that. That was just published in a new expanded edition. And there's a link to that on my website also. I'd love for people to check it out.
All right. So we can go to jonathanrausch.com.
You not only can, but
you will. You will.
You must.
It's a mandate. If you're a listener of this podcast, you must go. Excellent. Well, I know I will be clicking through. Absolutely. And I've really appreciated the time you've taken to chat with us and share your experiences. And thank you so much.
Thank you. It was fun. And this is my favorite subject.
That is lucky for a lot of introverts. After this interview, I did some deeper thinking about what that introvert equals geek part of our conversation meant. The result was a blog post that speculates about the reason for those two words being used interchangeably. It reminded me that while stereotypes often serve a purpose of being a type of societal shorthand for describing certain groups of people, it's important to recognize when those stereotypes cross over into assumptions and only serve as a substitute for getting to know someone better. You can find the full blog post on my website, www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. I hope you enjoyed this podcast and will consider becoming a regular listener. Upcoming interviews over the next few months include UK-based musician, writer, and podcaster Andy Mort, New York Times bestselling author, recognized international sales training expert, and motivational speaker Grant Cardone, Brad Feld, who is an entrepreneur, author, blogger, and venture capitalist at Foundry Group, Chris Guillebeau, author of The $100 Startup and The Art of Nonconformity, as well as being the founder of the World Domination Summit, Lisa Petrilli, author of The Introvert's Guide to Success in Business and Leadership, and world travelers Betsy and Warren Taub of Married with Luggage. Thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoy this podcast, I invite you to share it with your friends, your colleagues, and your social media networks, and consider leaving a review on iTunes or on the podcast webpage. If you'd like to learn more about my coaching, speaking, and training services, you can find me online at www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. You'll also find information about my first book, Insight, Reflections on the Gifts of Being an Introvert, which is available through Amazon.com. This is Beth Bielow of The Introvert Entrepreneur, and until we meet again, remember that success is an inside job.